Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Catherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dog joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that could be wrecking our dog's health. And this is true even for many premium brands. Fortunately, she found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do the same thing to see incredible changes in their dog's health. Listener, I've watched this video, and honestly, it's 20 minutes well spent. The health of my animals means everything to me. This stuff has improved the coats and energy of mine, and they love it. Normally they are picky with food, but they really enjoy this stuff. Go to badlandsfood.com/obscura and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/obscura.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, listener. I'm glad you're here. Take a seat next to the fire.
Welcome to Obscura, where we shine a light on the dark.
July 2009, Escambia County, Florida. Leonard Patrick Gonzalez Jr., age 35, is broke. He's desperate for cash, so desperate that his mom is paying his bills. Patrick, of course, finds this embarrassing. Against his wife Tabitha's better judgment, he invested their savings into a karate school. Savings that the two saved up together, working at Long Wiggins' antique business. But the karate business, like 40% of businesses in the United States, went belly up. And that little venture has placed Patrick, and by extension, Tabitha, in financial jeopardy. Patrick felt like he was letting his family down, both his wife and his children. But he had an idea. His ticket out of this whole mess was 66-year-old Bird Bud Starling Billings. He knew Bud when he worked for one of his car dealerships. In fact, Patrick cornered Bud before he quit and propositioned the man to be business partners in the karate school. A 50-50 investment, Bud didn't see any future in the project. He owned dealerships, a strip club, and a bunch of other small businesses around town. Bud was wealthy, and he knew his stuff, but he didn't like the karate school idea. He'd seen too many of them fail over the decades. Bud turned Patrick down, but out of generosity, he donated $5,000 to the project, shook hands with Patrick, and then sent him on his way. Patrick knew Bud was loaded, and he resented Bud for that $5,000, especially now that he was broke. He resented him for being the big name in town, with all his businesses and wealth, with his house, with his multi-acre bright green lawn, a pool, and a detached garage almost as big as the house itself. That house, Bud's house, that was Patrick's ticket out of this. But he needed a crew. He had the equipment, the guns, the vehicle, and even the camo. What Patrick lacked was a getaway driver and a crew of men to haul whatever big safe they found in Bud's house out of the door with them. There, of course, were some pitfalls. Bud and his wife Melanie to start. Melanie was over 20 years younger than her husband at 43 years old. She might be more spry than Bud and react quickly when things start going down. And then there were the children. The kids were a big deal. A major part of why Patrick wants a full crew. Bud and Melanie have 16 children. A lot of them disabled and adopted. There's no telling how they will react if they realize their home is getting robbed. Yes, Patrick needs a crew. Lonnie Smith and Tony Issa are approached about participating in the job. They hear about the robbery, are told they can make millions of dollars. Both men decline. After being told no by two separate people, Patrick feels a sense of desperation. He goes to his father, Leonard Patrick Gonzalez Sr., and asks him. The old man owed him after all. He was abusive to young Patrick growing up, and provided a broken home to live in. Leonard Sr. says yes, maybe out of a sense of guilt or loyalty to his son. Maybe Leonard Sr. just wants the money. Whatever the reason, he agrees. Patrick's father will be the getaway driver for the job. With the first domino falling, the job starts coming together. Seven more people are recruited. Donnie Stallworth is lured in by the money. Stallworth is a staff sergeant, served 10 years in the U.S. Air Force as an aircraft mechanic, with multiple deployments to Afghanistan and Iraq. Man is a trained killer, and very large to boot. Patrick tells Stallworth that a safe in Bud's home contains $13 million, that he'll obtain the clothes and the disguises that the crew need, and even provide the guns. In fact, Patrick tells Stallworth he'll get him a shotgun. He tells Stallworth that he needs someone with leadership skills and experience in charge of the action once inside the house. Donnie Stallworth agrees to the job as long as no one is murdered. What he doesn't know is that Patrick is a man with a rap sheet that includes many violent offenses. Despite his recent run with a karate school, saving money, and decent work record, there's a rage boiling below the surface of Patrick Gonzalez. Without this knowledge, Stallworth agrees to the job, and he doesn't realize that there will be no leading Patrick. Patrick is a bit of a con man, and has a lot of people convinced that he has connections with the cartel. Spoiler alert, he doesn't. Wayne Coldiron is recruited. Patrick doesn't have a lot of respect for him. He lies to him and offers a flat rate for the job. Patrick tells Coldiron that they're collecting drug money from a wealthy man for the cartel. And if Coldiron ever says anything to authorities after the job, he'd watch his old lady die at the hands of the cartel in front of him, before being executed himself. Still, Coldiron agrees. He needs the money. Patrick asks Gary Sumner if he's in. Sumner agrees to join the crew and offers two recruits, Frederick Thornton, age 19, and his friend Rakeem Florence, age 17. Both work for Sumner's car detailing business. The two young men meet with Patrick and shake his hand. Thornton tells Patrick he wants a gun if he's going into the house. Patrick agrees. Thornton and Rakeem join the crew. Finally, they need a place to store the safe and wash the money. Patrick speaks with Pamela Long Wiggins, the owner of the antique store he works at, and she agrees to keep the safe in her store for a cut of the money. With Long Wiggins and the crew, it was now eight people strong. July 9th, 2009.
Let's go through and let's talk about this. Let's be honest. You've come halfway. Let's go the rest way. Uh-huh. Let's get to the truth of the matter. Let's tell us did you see who shot?
Yeah.
Okay, who shot?
Patrick.
Okay, what did he shoot him with?
I think it was a nine.
Okay. Let's go from the beginning, okay? You leave the little trailer and you head over there. The plan is a robbery, is that correct?
Yes, it was.
Okay, so let's go from there. What's the plan?
We're just going to go in there. That's all he said. We're just going to go in there, get the money, and be done with it.
Okay. All right, so that's the plan.
That's the plan.
Okay. Who is actually in the van with you?
That's me, Rakeem, Stalls. Not that the daddy, I think. For sure, the daddy, the pops.
The pops. Mm-hmm. So there's four of you in the van. Mm-hmm. So how many's in the other vehicle?
I think it was Pat and the other dude, the last dude.
The one you picked out of the lineup? The white guy? Mm-hmm. Okay, and who else?
That was it, them two.
Okay. So I'm only seeing six.
Yeah.
Okay. How did they get up there? Who was driving the other vehicle?
We all got let off at the church.
Okay, you got let off at the church?
We was at the church.
Who went? Okay.
We let them off at the church.
Who did you let off at the church?
Pat and another dude, the other white dude.
Okay. So Pat and the white dude are let out at the church.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you and Rakeem and Stiles are in the van with Papa.
Yeah.
Okay. So where's Gary?
He's in another vehicle.
Okay. He's in what kind of vehicle?
Explorer.
Mm-hmm. Who's with him?
I think he's by himself.
You think he's by himself?
Yeah, I remember he's by himself, yeah.
Okay. Does he go and drop the other two off?
Drop them off where?
I mean, does he get them closer, or do they walk over there from the church?
They go from the church. I guess there's some way, I don't know how they got through there, but they went through the little church part right there.
Okay. And they go in first or second?
They go in. All right, Stars go in first, then we go in. And then we can't wait. Me and Rakeem and that other dude came in at the same time.
On the day of the murders, the group drove in Stallworth's Explorer to a Walmart in Gulf Breeze to meet Gonzalez. Gonzalez was driving a red minivan that belonged to Long Wiggins. Sumner, Stallworth, and Gonzalez went into a Walmart, and Thornton and Florence remained in the Explorer in the parking lot. A security video from the Walmart places Sumner, Stallworth, and Gonzalez inside the store on July 9th at 3:30 p.m., where they purchased a pair of boots. The men then drove in the two vehicles to Gonzalez Sr.'s house, where Cold Iron was also present. Gonzalez provided the weapons, black clothing, masks, and gloves that the participants used in the crimes. They are decked out in full ninja garb. Patrick gives Cold Iron a .357 revolver and tells him not to mess this up. Patrick shows the crew tactical pictures and a layout of the Billings home and gives them their assignments.
Patrick,
yeah.
Did he say he had been in the house before?
He said they done been to the house and scoped it out and stuff like that. He had pictures of the house, so we knew how to get in the house and stuff.
Now he had pictures of the house, of the outside of the house?
Yeah.
Okay. Did he have any pictures of the inside of the house?
No.
Okay. Did he say that there was going to be video cameras?
They just said there was video cameras on the outside.
Okay. So they weren't aware of the video cameras on the inside? At least he didn't tell you of any?
Yeah.
Okay. Did he say what y'all were after?
He just said, all the thing he told us, only reason I'm in this right now is because I was trying to get some money for my family.
Did he say there was a lot of money?
Yeah.
How much money?
He said like $13 million. He said there was a vault built around the house.
There's a vault built in the house?
Yeah, like.
Okay. And when you saw them get that little safe, did you think this was the vault?
No, I know that wasn't the vault.
He tells Thornton and Florence to enter through a door on the far left of the home, Stallworth to enter through the front door, and Cold Iron to enter with Patrick through a sliding glass door in the master bedroom. Patrick shows the others how to use zip ties to secure hands and passed out the ties.
Okay, and you came in the far door on the left, right?
Yeah.
Okay, who goes in that door with you?
Me and Rakeem.
Okay, so you and Rakeem come in from, if this is the house right here, all right, there's a door right here, there's a door right here, and there's a door kind of on the side. So you and Rakeem come through this one. Okay, so I'm going to put Freddie and Rakeem. And I don't know how to spell Rakeem. Spell Rakeem for me now.
R-A-H-K-E-E-M.
Okay. Excuse me. So you and Rakeem come through this door. Who goes through the middle door?
Stalls.
Stalls?
Mm-hmm.
That's up Stallworth. Right?
Stallworth?
I think so.
Okay. Describe Stallworth for me.
How do he look?
Yeah.
He's like big and black. He about my height. I look like, yeah, about my height.
You know what he does for a living?
Army. I think in the military.
He's in the military? Okay. All right. So who comes in this side door?
If somebody came through that, it was Pat and the other dude.
Okay. If somebody came through here, it's Pat and the other dude. Yeah. But you didn't see which way they came in.
Yeah.
Okay. But you know, because you three were in the van together with Pops, that y'all came in these two doors.
Yeah.
Okay. So what kind of weapon are you carrying?
Shotgun.
A shotgun? Is it a pump shotgun or?
Yeah, a pump.
Okay. So you're carrying the pump shotgun. What is Rakim carrying?
AK-47.
Where did you get these weapons?
From Pat.
So Pat supplied you with the weapons. Mm-hmm. What is Stalls carrying?
A shotgun. Same thing I was carrying.
Okay. What is Pat carrying?
His 9.
He has a 9mm. You identified the other white guy, which we know to be Wayne, but I don't think you know his real name. What is he carrying?
357.
Okay, a 357 Magnum. Is it a revolver?
Revolver.
Okay.
Like, how do you know this? It's a 357.
Because I haven't seen it.
It's a wheel gun, like
yeah.
The cowboys?
Yeah.
Okay. And what? Okay, that's all 5 of you there. And then there's Pops driving this car.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said that, God, I can't think of his name.
Gary.
So. Gary, yeah, Gary is driving the SUV. Okay. Tell me what happens when you go in.
Part of the crew pulls up in the red van to the home. 5 armed men exit the vehicle, each of them masked and clothed head to toe in black. The front door is kicked in, and Bud is caught off guard watching television in his living room. The rest of the men start pouring in from different parts of the home. Dressed head to toe in black, this must have been quite a shock for Bud Billings. Patrick roughs the man up, striking Bud several times, demanding he tell him where the money is located. He tells Patrick he does not have any cash in the house. Patrick fires a shot into the floor. He's shaking with rage. Patrick repeats the question and receives the same response from Billings. To Stallworth's dismay, Patrick points his 9mm automatic pistol at Bud and fires into his leg. Billings is screaming, holding his leg on the floor. Patrick screams the question again, demanding to know where the money is, screaming right into Bud's face. The wounded man responds that he doesn't have any money in the house. He's begging the disguised Patrick to leave. Patrick presses the pistol to Bud's other leg and fires. Bud is in serious pain. He's rolling on the floor holding his legs. Patrick asks Mrs. Billings where the master bedroom is. After she tells him, Patrick drags Bud to his feet, telling him to get up and shoving him into the master bedroom. Stallworth follows and stands guard by the door. This isn't going the way it was planned.
We go in.
Okay.
I mean, Rakim, we looking around, whatever. So then we see Pat and Stall's them right there. Pat came in. He told him. Asked him, where's the money? So I don't know.
Who and says I don't know?
The man.
The man, okay.
So. He shot in the ground. I think that's what he did first. He shot in the ground first.
Okay, so he fired in the ground.
Yeah, and I jumped, but I didn't really see it. I jumped behind the wall because I was kind of scared. I hadn't heard any gunshots before. So then he was shooting. He asked him again. And he shot him in the leg. That they said he shot him in the leg. I didn't see it because I was like kind of hiding behind the wall. I was kind of scared.
Or can you tell you that he shot him in the leg, or did you hear this later, or what?
I heard it from later from what's his name? Stalls had told.
Stalls told you? Stallworth said he saw him shoot him in the leg.
Yeah.
Okay. So he asks him for the money. He says I don't know. He shoots in the ground. He asks him for the money again. He doesn't answer this time, and then he shoots him in the leg. Okay. Then what happens?
Thornton is set outside to retrieve duffel bags from the van outside when he hears 3 more shots. When Thornton returns to the bedroom, Bud Billings is lying face down on the floor in a pool of blood. Patrick then asks Mrs. Billings to open the safe in the closet of the bedroom.
So I was just freaked out about that, so I was kind of by the wall. So I think he had asked the wife or something like that, with the wife, where's the room, man? And she had pointed at the room. And we had went to the room.
Okay. Who all goes in the room?
I don't even know. I know Patrick went. I think Stahl stood at by the door.
Okay.
Yeah. That's about the only two that I think remember.
Okay, did you go in the room?
No, I stood like right there by the
entrance.
By the stairs, yeah, by the front door and the stairs. I was standing right there.
Okay. So do you see Pat shoot anybody? Other than thinking he shot him in the leg?
No, when I was looking by the standing by the room door. And I was talking to the wife because I had heard him shooting the man. And I had looked, and the man was just laying on the ground dead, I guess. And he asked the lady, and the lady was in the closet. And I just did him like this. Good shot.
Did you hear him count down or anything?
No, I don't even remember. My mom was, I blacked out kind of. I was just so scared.
But you saw Pat with a gun shooting?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you see anybody else shooting?
No.
What did y'all get?
Melanie, standing in complete shock, tells him that she doesn't know the code. Patrick presses his pistol to her forehead and fires a single shot. In a rage, he shoots her again in the face and then twice more, through the back, out the chest. Patrick orders the others to take the safe and leave. The group leave in Patrick's large red van, then meet up with Sumner and the Explorer.
A safe and a bag.
A safe and a bag?
Yeah.
What'd the bag look like?
It was like a little creamy color bag, like that color.
Okay. Anything else that you saw?
And the safe, that's it.
How did you get the safe out?
They had picked the safe up. It was a little safe.
Okay, who picked it up?
I don't even remember. I didn't even see who picked the safe up. I just know that was in the room. It had to be on them. I think the Stars might have picked it up.
Okay, when you left out of there, did you all get in the van or did you go back to, you got Gary out there with an SUV. What'd you do?
We all got in the van, drove off, went around the corner.
Okay.
And we hopped in the car with, it was somebody walking down the street, so we drove straight and we took a right. Then we went to another light and we took a right.
Who'd you see walking down the street?
Some old white guy.
An old, okay. And from what direction was he walking?
All right, we turned on the street. We going this way. He was walking this way. Like, okay. Towards us, so we didn't get off.
From the church area?
He's heading towards the church, right?
No, like, okay, when we come out the yard.
Right.
We turn right.
You take a right.
Yeah, the church is here.
Yeah.
Okay, so you turn away from the church.
Mm-hmm. We go down that street. We take the first left.
Okay.
The first left, there's a man walking down the street, I guess going back home or somewhere.
Okay.
So we kept going. We took the left. Everything.
How much money did y'all get?
Didn't get anything. They just got the safe, but...
You didn't get paid?
Come on, Frederick. That's important.
What?
Well, what was in the safe?
I don't know. They haven't opened the safe yet that I know of. I'm like at the bottom. I don't really know stuff like that. Like when we was leaving, after all this and stuff happened, we went down. It was another vehicle. Gary and Stahl got in that vehicle. And me and Rakim had stayed in the Explorer. And we had went through Alabama and stuff like that.
Where this is for? Say that one more time. What'd you get into?
We was in the Explorer.
The Explorer. Okay. Is that the SUV that Gary had?
Yeah.
Okay. And what color was it?
Tan.
Yeah. And y'all got in that and went to Alabama?
Yeah.
Okay. And the rest of them got in what, the van?
No, they had got us another car.
What kind of car?
It was a red van.
A red van?
Yeah.
But it wasn't the same van that you used?
No, it was another van.
Okay.
The safe and guns are transferred to the Explorer. Gonzalez tells Gonzalez Sr. and Cold Iron to drive the large red van back to Gonzalez Sr.'s house in Pensacola. The others get into the Explorer, remove their black clothing, and drive to a location where they had left Long Wiggins' red minivan before the crimes were carried out. Gonzalez, Sumner, and Stallworth drive the red minivan back to the Pensacola area. Thornton and Florence return in the Explorer and meet with the others in the red minivan at the Walmart in Gulf Breeze. Both vehicles are driven to Long Wiggins' antique store. The safe is left with Long Wiggins in a storage area behind her store. The guns are left with Long Wiggins and Gonzalez. Gonzalez tells Thornton and Florence to take the clothing worn during the crime and burn all of it, which they do. The men don't realize it yet, but the crew has made it out with a safe that contains children's prescription medication, paperwork, and some jewelry. A hidden safe located elsewhere in the Billings home is loaded with the cash they came for. Patrick and the crew left it behind.
The mom and dad, I lived next door, and the daughter came over and said, the mother and father have been shot, and they're dead.
And she said they've been shot?
Yes. They're in the bedroom, ma'am. They're dead. I gotta go get the kids. There's kids in the house.
Law enforcement was called to the Billings home by April Spencer, a registered nurse who lived in a trailer on the Billings property, and helped them with the children. Spencer had been alerted when Adriana, one of Billings' children, came to her trailer. Adriana had been instructed to go to Spencer's trailer in a phone conversation she had with Ashley Markham, the Billings' adult daughter, who did not live in the home. Markham had received a missed call from her mother's home phone number and returned the call. Jake, another one of the Billings' children, answered the call and was screaming incoherently. Markham asked him to speak to their mom or dad, but instead, Adriana got on the phone and alerted Markham about what was happening in the house. Markham told Adriana to run to April Spencer's house and get her. When Spencer arrived, she saw blood in the hallway and found the Billings on the floor of the master bedroom. She called emergency services, and the Escambia County Sheriff's Office responded to the scene.
Sheriff's 911, this is Jeff.
Hi, I need somebody to go out to my parents' house. I was on the phone with my sister and trying to get in touch with them, and she said they were on the bathroom floor and there's nobody there. She said they were dead, and I don't know what she's talking about.
What's her name?
Melanie and Bud Billings.
Listener, when researching case files for this show, I need a lot of focus, and I'll be honest, when I sit down to write and research these cases, I can use coffee as a crutch, believe me, and I even resort to energy drinks. That's where Magic Mind has been coming in. Just a few weeks ago, they reached out to me. They sent me this box full of these little bottles of juice. They're called mental performance shots. And hey, I admit, I was skeptical at first, but after 2 weeks of taking them, hey, I'm impressed. I found that I've cut down from 3 or 4 cups of coffee to 1 with the help of these little shots, which means I've been running to the bathroom less and focusing on my work more. And speaking of focus, mental performance shot is a great name for them because after I take one, my head is cleared much quicker than with coffee. I'm not fighting back that morning fog, so I can focus on my work. Listener, I genuinely love Magic Mind. I've been recommending it to my friends and family, and I plan on making it a new part of my morning routine. It is that good. They have a limited time offer you can use now that gets you up to 48% off your first subscription or 20% off one-time purchases with the code OBSCURA20 at checkout. You can claim it at magicmind.com/obscura. The Billings both died of multiple gunshot wounds. Mr. Billings was shot 5 times, in both legs, the left cheek exiting at the right side of the neck, and 2 in the back of the head. The 2 leg wounds would have been survivable. The cheek wound would have been survivable for at least a few minutes, until the victim drowned in his own blood. The 2 head wounds were inflicted close together, based on the similar angles and position of the wounds, and were each fatal. Mrs. Billings was shot 4 times, once in the face and once in the head, and 2 through her back, All of her wounds were fatal. The first shot to her forehead would have rendered her dead or unconscious. The other shots were inflicted as she lay on the floor. Mr. Billings was located face down in the bedroom with a zip tie on his left wrist. Mrs. Billings was in front of the closet. All of the bullets and shell casings recovered from the crime scene were 9mm. A firearms examiner was able to show that the two bullets recovered from Mrs. Billings' body were fired from a Springfield Armory 9mm pistol that was found hidden in the spring cushion under the cushion of the back seat of a vehicle owned by Long Wiggins. Three other bullets and all 10 bullet casings recovered at the residence were also fired from that 9mm pistol. The safe taken from Billings' home was recovered unopened under a pile of bricks in the backyard of Long Wiggins' residence. Long Wiggins' fingerprints were found on a plastic bag, covering the safe. Long Wiggins and her husband, Hugh Wiggins, gave an AK-47 and two shotguns to Eddie Denson, a friend in Mississippi, who turned the weapons over to law enforcement. Denson also observed Hugh Wiggins toss a small handheld radio onto the side of the road, which was recovered by law enforcement the next day. Gonzalez's DNA was found on the AK-47. Gonzalez was also included as a possible contributor of the DNA found on one of the shotguns. Surveillance footage of the vehicle used for the robbery was used to track the van to Gonzalez Sr.'s home. Patrick Gonzalez Jr. was brought in for questioning. The interrogation was over an hour long, but I want to clue this bit in, which Patrick tries to place the blame on the cartel.
La M.A.
Who?
La M.A.
What is that?
The Mexican Mafia.
Okay, he's associated with them? That's what you heard? Okay, I do need him. All right. What kind of dealings? I just heard that he cleans money for him, that's all. All right. Who's his contact person? Who was his contact person? I don't know. What part of Alabama? Like Lillian.
That's all I know. I don't know anything else more than that. At this point, it's getting kind of... This is a scary situation to be in. I don't want to talk about this. I mean, I really don't. I really don't. Not unless you guys can guarantee me that I'm safe from anything that they could do.
Well, nothing.
I'm not going to step on these people. These are the kind of people that I think... That's what I think happened over there. You know what I mean? I think they killed this man and his wife. I watch the History Channel. I watch Gangland. I know about all that stuff.
So that's what you're thinking. It's
what I think.
Why the Mexican Mafia. That's what you're thinking.
That's what I think.
But what makes you think that? Just give me your opinion. What's your opinion of the whole thing?
The way that it happened, I mean, to hurt a woman, I mean, no one would, you know what I'm saying? The whole thing, the way it happened was just too, you know what I'm saying? And then the same thing in Alabama right after that, I'm thinking that's...
What happened in Alabama?
When there have been the same people do something in Alabama to husband and their wife at a bar or something like that.
Wow, man.
And that's where these guys are.
You talking about the same time as this went now?
Yeah.
Well, we've been so busy on this one, I ain't had time to read the paper or watch TV, to be honest with you.
Well, I thought they connected them to...
Oh, I don't know.
You haven't got in touch with the Lillian people or Foley or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked to them. We ain't connected anything.
Well, I don't... I mean, all I know is that's a rumor on the street. I don't know anything more than that about that, as far as them. As far as the vehicle, y'all are welcome to inspect that, you know.
We're probably going to do that.
That's fine. I mean, got nothing to hide.
And you haven't loaned that car or that vehicle to anybody, right?
It's been sitting at my dad's, but I'm telling you, he wouldn't loan it to anybody.
But you don't know that for sure. You said you don't stay over that often. You just stop and visit.
He wouldn't do that. He couldn't do that. Anyways, I mean,
you're hoping he wouldn't do that.
He wouldn't do that.
Okay. But you don't know he didn't do it, right? Because you weren't there. You're not over there the whole time, right? And I'm not accusing your dad either. But what I'm trying to say, you don't know for a fact that he didn't loan that to the car or something, have to get with somebody. Maybe test drive and see if they can find out if it broke, you know, what was wrong with it, anything like that. Am I correct? Would that be fair to say?
I don't think he would do that. I know he wouldn't.
So he wouldn't have another mechanic, fellow mechanic or a friend of his, let him test drive it, see what...
The thing could hardly move anyway. You know what I mean? I don't think... Anyways, that van doesn't even match the same van that was over there. I don't think that's the same deal. Because I can look at it and see.
Oh, just by these pictures there?
No, by laying your eyes on the thing on television and that picture, and then looking at what I got. In fact, the one on television was that's a different vehicle.
Which one?
That one was a lot nicer than the one that...
But that's the only one they showing on TV right there.
Yeah.
Okay. Look how distorted this shit is. Okay? This is what you're seeing on TV. This not may not necessarily be what we got.
Yeah, y'all got digitizers and all that kind of stuff. You know, y'all can.
So you can't tell me for sure this is not your van.
Yes, I can.
The only thing you can tell me right now that you weren't driving it that day.
But I know that van was there. That van was not involved in any crime.
Was you at your dad's house that day?
Yes, I did. Okay. I came by there.
That night.
And and by the time I got home, my dad was three sheets to the wind. So I'm telling you now.
But what I'm trying to say, I'm not accusing your dad or you. I'm just saying you cannot confirm everything he does.
No, not if I'm not there. No.
Exactly. No. That's all I'm saying. You don't know what he did the hours you weren't there with him.
You know? I know he was drinking.
Well,
probably took a Flexeril on top of it.
Gonzalez's large red van was recovered behind Gonzalez Sr.'s trailer. The van contained a package of trash bags, a canister of disinfected wipes, some scouring pads, and two tires. Gonzalez's fingerprints were recovered from the interior of the back passenger side window of the van. Dan Blocker, the owner of a tire and automotive business, told investigators that Gonzalez, Gonzalez Sr., and Cold Iron arrived at his business in Long Wiggins' red minivan on the day after the murders. Blocker had known Gonzalez for years through servicing vehicles for Gonzalez. On this day, Gonzalez was transporting two wheels in the minivan and asked Blocker to replace the tire on those two rims with another set of tires Gonzalez was also transporting in the minivan. Blocker thought the request was strange because the tires on the rims were better than the replacement tires Gonzalez provided. Then, Gonzalez placed a measly $20 on the counter and told Blocker, "If anyone asks, you haven't seen me."
Do you understand where we're at? And why we're trying to eliminate you?
Yes, I do.
Tell me why. I get it. Okay,
tell me why. First of all, anybody that's got a van that's similar or matches the description of what you're looking for, you're going to question. I understand that.
That's one part.
And then I saw that you have Cab's name written down, so you probably know that I know that him and Cab aren't the best of friends, which I know. And I'm dear friends with Cab. Believe me, I never had any problem with any of those
people. So now we've got you with a red van who knows our victim.
Yeah, I know. I understand. That's why you're calling me.
You're in that group, that circle. There's a circle.
Right.
Yeah, you're in it.
I understand. But the thing is, I didn't do anything.
Let's work our way out of it then.
I didn't get my way in it. I'm just going to give you whatever questions you ask me, I can give an honest answer.
You're in it. But you're in it. Help us get you out of it. Because you're in it, whether you like it or not, whether how uncomfortable it is.
It's very uncomfortable.
I understand that.
It's extremely uncomfortable being in this room like that. I wish there was still a mirror in here or something.
Why?
What, so you can see you there?
Well, you know, it's the... It's stupid.
We didn't have a mirror in this room.
Ever.
It's stupid, but it doesn't matter.
So you've been down here before and seen a mirror, huh?
No, I watched Law and Order a whole bunch.
This is real life. This is real.
Right.
You're in the big leagues. This is big leagues.
I understand that. But I also understand that...
The radio room called me. They said the front door.
And the van there are two different things.
I said that you don't know the evidence we got, and I believe we got the right van here. But
you believe my van's the right van? The van that was...
Sir?
You believe my van was that?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. I think I need an attorney then. In fact, I do need an attorney if we're doing that.
Nobody's accusing you of doing it.
You just told me that my van...
I didn't tell you nothing. I said, that's my opinion.
That means a lot. Sir. You're the chief investigator.
I'm not a chief investigator.
You're an investigator of the golden. I've watched the show.
And the show is going to get you in trouble.
We'll talk to him. Watch the show? Then you know it's TV.
Yeah, but... Like, don't hurt, you know.
Watch the show.
Man, nobody's accused of trying to pin anything on me. I'm just telling you where the information we're getting and what my opinion was.
Well,
and now that's why that's why we asked you to come down here so
right.
we can.
That's why I gave you the information I've given you so that you would know that I'm not involved.
And I appreciate everything you was giving me. I do. I real honestly do.
Now, I wish I hadn't said the thing about Lame and all that, but you probably already got that. So
we've got some, yeah.
I figured you did, so...
Hang with me.
Yes, sir.
Law enforcement obtained records for the phones used by Sumner and Gonzalez. An analysis showed 42 contacts between them from July 2nd through July 10th, 2009. The records showed several phone calls being made from each phone on July 9th, the day of the murders, but none during the time that the crime took place, or immediately thereafter. There was also a flurry of calls made from each phone between 6:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. on July 9th. Testimony from Thornton and Florence established that the group, except for Cold Iron, had attempted to take the safe from the Billings home 5 days earlier. However, the plan was abandoned after the lights came on at the home when the men drove into the driveway. Listener, I gotta say, how bad was this Cold Iron guy? I mean, out of a group of eight, he gets no respect. He doesn't seem to know why he's involved. He seems to think it's a cartel, drug money type thing. And then 5 days before, they even try to leave him out of the whole thing. It's just, with all these goofs making all these mistakes, Cold Iron must have been pretty dang bad to be constantly left out. Now, to add to the overwhelming evidence, there were 16 cameras recording every step the crew took when they were in the Billings home. Despite their ninja garbs, it was pretty easy to match each member to the shapes in the video footage. Finally, to top things off, 19-year-old Thornton and 17-year-old Florence turned themselves in only days after the murders. Their family saw writing on the wall and urged them to take a plea. You've been listening to Thornton's confession earlier in the episode. Now, the following is testimony from Rakeem Florence, during the trial.
Now, in this case, have you entered a plea?
Yes, sir.
Was part of that plea that you basically cooperate and testify truthfully?
Yes, sir.
And what is your understanding of the maximum sentence that you could receive in this?
Life.
At that particular meeting that you remember, who was doing all the talking?
Gonzalez Jr.
Is the person you're describing as Gonzalez Jr. present in the courtroom?
Yes, sir.
If you could you point him out and describe where he's what he's wearing?
He wearing a suit with a tie.
Was there a planning and discussion that happened there?
Yes, sir.
And who was doing the talking?
Gonzalez Jr.
What was he telling you on July the 4th that was going to happen? Orders were you giving her?
Me and Thornton was going to go through a door. Starworth was going to go through a door. He was going to go through a door. And we were just going to kind of like rob him.
Okay. Was there discussions about how much money was in there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How much? What was it?
$13 million.
Were there more specific discussions about the location?
No, sir. Just the vault.
Just the vault. So as you move, do you move closer inside into the room?
Yes, sir. Like into the kitchen, going into the living room. Like.
And who do you see at that point? Do you see people inside the living room?
Yes, sir.
Who do you see?
I see Mr. Billing on the floor, and Miss Billing like in the middle between the couches. And I see Gonzalez Jr. and Cold Iron.
What does a defendant do? Does he approach Mr. Billings?
Yes, sir. When I walked in, he was asking him, where's the money, where's the money?
Okay. What was Mr. Billings responding?
He don't have any money.
After that was said, that he didn't have any money, what did the defendant do? Do you recall?
No, sir.
Did he say any more words?
Yes, sir. He kind of like told him, get up, and he took him into the room.
You recall any shots being fired in that area?
I heard a shot, but I didn't really see it. I didn't see it.
Okay. Did you hear shots inside the living room?
Yes, sir.
Now, after those shots are fired, what do you hear the defendant saying?
Where's the money? And told him, like, get up. And he took him into the room.
Do you hear what's going on inside the master bedroom?
No, sir.
Can you hear Mr. Junior Gonzalez saying anything?
No, sir.
Do you hear Mrs. Billings saying anything?
No, sir.
Okay. Do you hear any shots?
Yes, sir.
How many shots do you hear?
First, I hear three shots. And then after three shots, I heard three more shots a little later, and then he kind of like kicked the safe, and I went and got the safe out of the room. And
who told you to get the safe out of the room?
Gonzalez Jr.
Now, when you went in there, what did you see?
I seen Mr. Billings laying on the ground, mm-hmm. and I kind of picked up the safe. And
did you see Mrs. Billings?
No, sir.
Okay. First of all, when you went into that room, who was inside the room with a gun?
Gonzalez Jr.
Was anybody else in there?
Not that I could see.
Now, after this had happened, and you all are in the red van, was there any discussion about what happened amongst you guys?
Yes, sir. Stalworth kind of told it like he killed somebody. Like Stalworth was like, he killed somebody. Yeah.
All right, sustained.
Had there been any discussion prior to this time frame from Gonzalez Jr. indicating that anybody would be killed?
No, sir.
Did you believe anybody was going to be killed?
No, sir.
Let me ask a question. Around that, you said you carried an AK-47 or something like that, correct?
Yes, sir.
Did you even know how to use it?
No, sir.
A total of 8 people were convicted for planning and participating in the crimes. The 5 criminals who entered the Billings home, the 2 criminals who drove the getaway vehicles, and the criminal who helped dispose of the stolen property were all found or pleaded guilty. Leonard Patrick Gonzalez Jr. made a statement at his sentencing. Despite the overwhelming evidence against him, we're talking DNA, eyewitnesses, his own crew selling him out, 16 cameras recording the act, and then footage placing him, as well as the cell phone evidence being pretty damning, he is both arrogant and indignant here. It's worth a listen.
The very conviction from the jury should be reversed due to the lack of evidence, which didn't prove me guilty. I wasn't guilty. I'm not guilty. The prosecution did not produce any evidence that I had ever even been to the crime scene, that I'd ever touched or had any control or contact with that murder weapon, or that the getaway vehicle was even the same vehicle found at Gonzalez Sr.'s residence, or that I'd ever been seen driving or controlling either one of them. And finally, people from all across the country watched this trial, and they too saw the prosecution did not prove their case. I appreciate their support. Other people question how the highest profile case in Pensacola's 400-year history, only 3 days after jury selection, was done. A 3-day. Whether I'm sentenced to death row or life in prison, I'm still not guilty of those charges. I shouldn't have been found guilty just because Mark O'Brien and the Pensacola News Journal said so, or because Larry King, Nancy Grace, and Sheriff Morgan broadcasted it to millions of people around the world. The government brought me to trial. The burden of proof should have been on them. was on them. The government and the media declared my guilt outside of the courtroom. But inside, they just did not prove their case. I'm not guilty. I should have been found not guilty. And I expect my attorneys to make another motion for a verdict of acquittal and for justice to be served. Not the fast food style justice admitted via the media, but the kind that is the law.
All eight members of the crew were sentenced as follows. Leonard Patrick Gonzalez Jr., jury conviction of two death penalties for two counts of first-degree murder and a life sentence for one count of home invasion, robbery with a firearm. Donnie Stallworth, two consecutive life sentences for two counts first-degree murder, lengthy prison sentence for one count of home invasion, robbery with a firearm, effectively permanent life in prison. Wayne Coldiron, two consecutive life sentences for two counts first-degree murder, lengthy prison sentence for one count of home invasion robbery with a firearm, effectively permanent life in prison. Frederick Thornton, plea agreement, and testified against co-defendants, resulting in two concurrent 40-year sentences for two count second-degree murder, concurrent 22-year sentence for one count of home invasion robbery with a firearm. This totals 22 years in prison, then 18 years probation. Rakeem Florence, plea agreement, and testified against co-defendants, resulting in two concurrent 45-year sentences for two counts second-degree murder, concurrent 24-year sentence for one count of home invasion robbery with a firearm. Totals 24 years in prison, then 21 years probation. Gary Sumner, back-of-house getaway driver, plea agreement resulting in two concurrent 20-year sentences for two counts second-degree murder, concurrent 20-year sentence for one count of home invasion robbery with a firearm. Leonard Patrick Gonzalez Sr., front-of-house getaway driver, plea agreement resulting in two concurrent 17.5-year sentences for two counts second-degree murder, concurrent 17.5-year sentence for one count home invasion, robbery with a firearm. Pamela Long Wiggins, jury conviction resulting in concurrent 28-year sentence and 12-year sentence for two count of accessory after the fact to a felony. Leonard Gonzalez Sr. and Pamela Long Wiggins wouldn't serve out their prison sentences. They both died in prison, only a month apart and in 2015. Hey listener, don't forget to check out Magic Mind. Get 48% off your first subscription or 20% off one-time purchases with code OBSCURA20 at checkout. You can claim it at magicmind.com/obscura.